ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.
This is live courtroom coverage of the trial of Lindsay Clancy from the Hitting Killers podcast in True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
I'd like to start off just by asking, District Attorney asked you about resources that were provided to her. What were the resources?
We had discussed going on Psychology Today where...
I'm sorry?
She was aware of the website Psychology Today.
Website?
Yes. She was given the name of a case manager through her insurance who she could contact for assistance in finding new providers.
So other than telling her about the website for Psychology Today and talking about her insurance company and what they would allow for her to reach out for, what, other providers? Is that what it was?
Can you restate that?
Sure, of course. You referenced her insurance company.
Yes.
I mean, that's a major consideration in medical treatment, is it not? What a person has for insurance?
No.
No?
I don't understand what you mean by that.
You know what insurance is? As far as like a person paying their bills for medical treatment or psychiatric treatment.
The insurance is important because who you can see is limited by what insurance
right.
you have.
So that's what I was asking. As far as the insurance, you referenced that on the resources, when the DA asked you about resources, and I asked you what were the resources, and you said... going on the website for Psychology Today, right?
Yes.
And that you spoke to her about her insurance, right?
We gave her the name of a case manager who she could contact and her telephone number in case she wanted to find other providers. They would be able to look at their database and figure out what providers would be within the distance she was comfortable with, whether they were male or female, if she had a preference, and if she had any preference about any specialization.
Okay. And in reference to the insurance, what is the insurance? You answered the question about insurance. I'm just asking, what is the involvement of insurance in that offer of resources?
I don't understand your question.
Right. Maybe I didn't understand your answer. That's why I apologize. You had indicated that in addition to telling her to go on the website for
yes.
Psychology Today, that you spoke about her insurance and other providers that would be permitted, I guess, under her insurance.
Not every patient. The fact that she had a case manager at Blue Cross Blue Shield was an added benefit because they could assist her in finding providers.
Okay.
That's what I meant.
All right. Other than the case manager from Blue Cross Blue Shield and to do research off of the website for Psychology Today, what resources were provided to this woman?
There are numerous resources that are printed on the after visit summary. I don't know each and every one of them, but I think they would be in the medical record.
Okay. And that's something that is provided to a patient when they leave?
Yes.
She came in on a voluntary, is that correct? In other words, I know she was transported by an ambulance, but nevertheless, it was that she and her husband, Patrick, wanted her to be treated at McLean, correct?
She came in and signed in on a voluntary.
In other words, there were no orders of a court, no judge ordering that she be committed or anything like that. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. And she came in on, was it New Year's Eve? January 1st?
Yes.
And do you remember what time she came in?
I think she arrived at the CEC around 4.
Now, would you agree that on New Year's Eve in McLean Hospital, that that ward is pretty much running on a skeleton crew?
I can't speak to something. I'm not there.
Well, you know, it's obviously you're not there, but what about other people? Was skeleton crew New Year's Eve?
Oh, you would have to ask somebody who was there.
Well, you've worked there for what, 7 years?
5.
5 years. And what is the ward that she was on?
81 South.
81 South?
A as in apple, B as in boy, 1 South.
South. And how many doctors work at AB South, on whatever shifts that you may have?
There are 4 psychiatrists at assigned who work on AB 1 South.
Now, sorry, go ahead.
Yes, that's it.
And does that include you?
Yes.
And how many, approximately, how many nurses work on AB South?
I wouldn't know, but I know that there is a nurse assigned to each team and that there are 4 teams. Sometimes, yeah, in general.
4 teams on AB South, right?
Yes.
Okay. And when you say a team, that consists of what? A psychiatrist, a nurse perhaps, or what?
A psychiatrist, a nurse, a social worker, and an assigned mental health worker.
And what are the shifts that this team would work?
There are 3 shifts.
Okay. And would that be like, you know, 7 to 11, or 11 to 4, that type of thing?
I think there's 7-hour shifts or 8-hour shifts. I don't know the exact times.
All right. And are you assigned a shift, or do you just go whenever you want?
We are not assigned shifts.
And when she was brought, when she was presented to the hospital, she went through that initial evaluation that you told us about, the CEC. Is that correct?
I'm sorry.
CEC? Maybe you were talking about the CEC?
Yeah, can you repeat the question?
Sure. When she admitted herself and was escorted onto AB South, that's where she was evaluated?
She was evaluated in the CEC by the psychiatrist. Then she came to the unit and was seen by Dr. Madwa later the same day. So she met 2 psychiatrists on January 1st.
Okay. So you have a woman that has admitted herself to McLean on New Year's for help, right?
Yes.
And she was evaluated at the CEC. Is that on that ward or is that a different part of the hospital?
It's a different part.
Okay. And how long does that evaluation typically take?
I can't speak to that. I don't work in the CEC.
What do you do in the CEC? What happens in the CEC? Does this person sit down and they get interviewed, or what do they do?
There's a full psychiatric evaluation.
Uh-huh. And a full psychiatric evaluation consists of what?
A chief complaint, a history of, so basically a history of present illness, which would be what brings the person into the hospital.
Okay.
They review past psychiatric history, substance use history, social history, family history. They do a mental status exam, and then they make an assessment.
And they would be the CEC?
Psychiatrist.
And that would be the psychiatrist that you were referring to?
Dr. Outlaw.
Dr. Outlaw. Now, how long does a CEC typically take?
I do not know. It depends on the speed of the person seeing the patient.
I imagine that at some point, a psychiatrist or a social worker or somebody must get into the prior history that the patient had prior to coming to your doorstep, right?
That is a part of the evaluation, yes.
Okay. And you had a chance, as the district attorney asked you, as to whether or not you were able to review the medical records that involved Lindsay Clancy's treatment at McLean Hospital for the 4.5 days, right?
I was able to review the CEC note, which had an excerpt of the MGH evaluation and the notes that were available to me since January 1st at McLean.
Now, as a psychiatrist, I mean, when she goes to the hospital, she's your patient, right?
She's
your patient.
Yes.
Yes. And as a doctor, what you want to do is get all the information that's available on why this person is in your locked ward, right?
Yes.
So did you do inquiry into her prior history, or was that left to the CEC person or the social worker?
That is part of the evaluation.
And the evaluation is CEC?
And when I see her as well.
All right. So do you sometimes, when I say you, I mean you or the social worker or the CEC person, do you talk to people like third party, I think you said third party contacts?
Yes.
All right.
The social worker does.
Okay, so, and you reviewed the records. So when did the social worker talk to the first psychiatrist that she went to see?
The social worker contacted Patrick.
Well, I know you told us that he contacted Patrick, and that Patrick gave some history about the benzodiazepines that he was concerned about, and he thought she wasn't getting good medical care. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. You know that she had medical treatment before
yes.
she came to McLean.
Yes.
Okay. Who's her psychiatrist?
The nurse practitioner she was seeing prior to coming to McLean. I was aware of that person.
Would that be nurse practitioner Jalata?
Yes.
Did you speak to her?
No.
Did you look at her records?
I did not have access to them.
Why not?
They aren't in the same medical record system.
Well, the same medical record system is just so that you have access to MGH, you have access to Brigham and Women's Hospital, because it's all part of some big computer information access you have. What about other healthcare providers? Can you get access to their records?
Not immediately.
Well, how about if you have a release signed by a patient under the HIPAA law? You know what the HIPAA law is, obviously, right?
Yes.
And just tell me, what does that actually mean, that a patient allows someone to look at their medical records?
Yes.
And Lindsay was very, very cooperative with you guys, wasn't she?
Yes.
Did anyone ever ask her to sign a HIPAA release for anyone to get access to nurse practitioner Gelada's records?
No.
How about psychiatrist Tuff's records?
No.
How about nurse practitioner Paul's records?
No.
Who's Letitia Dukes?
She was a social worker, I think, that Lindsay saw at South Shore at the perinatal program.
Okay. And do you know when she went to the South Shore Rhode Island perinatal program?
I know it was prior to admission. I don't remember the exact dates.
Do you know what recommendations that she had received at that point?
No. Other than the medication.
Do you know what medication she was actually on when she presented to McLean Hospital?
Seroquel and Valium.
What is it?
Seroquel and Valium.
You knew that Dr. Tufts was the first psychiatrist that she actually consulted, correct?
I believe so.
And when I, again, if you don't know, just say you don't know.
Yes.
Okay. And I think you made reference to the fact, or maybe the DA made reference in questioning you, about the fact that she was looking for doctors to, for some type of medication or something. Is that fair?
That's a very vague statement. I don't know what you mean.
Okay. Well, actually, she saw Dr. Tufts because Dr. Tufts advertised that she was an expert in perinatal care, right?
Correction.
Overruled.
I wouldn't know why she saw Dr. Tufts.
Do you know what medication Dr. Tufts prescribed to her?
From what Lindsay told me, yes.
What?
Zoloft was the first.
All right. So Dr. Tufts, according to Lindsay, provided her, Lindsay, with Zoloft, which is an SSRI, correct?
It's an antidepressant in that class, yes.
Okay, so when you say an antidepressant in that class, the class would be selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, right?
Yes.
And that's pretty powerful stuff, isn't it?
I don't know what you mean by powerful.
No? Well, are you supposed to prescribe Zoloft or sertraline to a person that has bipolar?
I think it all depends on what you're seeing when you see the patient.
All right. So it's important, I would imagine, then, to be fair in your evaluation of this young woman that came to your hospital for help on New Year's to find out what any evaluations were of her condition, her presentation, her symptomology, when she saw that first psychiatrist, Dr. Tufts, right?
Lindsay was cooperative and she was forthcoming. I had no reason to think that she would not provide us with the what other providers thought, just like she told us that Tufts said she was worried about bipolar disorder.
I apologize. Yeah. Tufts advised her that she was worried about...
No, sorry, it was...
Gelada?
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry, thank you.
That's all right, no problem. And again, if you have records or you want to look at them, that's fine, because I know it's tough to have all the stuff in your head.
Yes. Thank you.
And so Dr. Tufts prescribed the Zoloft to her, and you knew that right after the initial prescription of Zoloft, do you know how many milligrams she was prescribed initially by Dr. Tufts?
Lindsay, I think, stated it was 25.
Okay. And then Dr. Tufts increased it to what, 100?
Lindsay said it was increased to 50.
50, all right. So, and again, you're in a, I don't know if it's appropriate to say, but you're in a mental institution, right? That's where you work, at McLean
Yes.
Hospital. Okay, and it's a locked ward, right?
Yes.
And she's a patient that's coming to you for help, right?
Yes.
Is it appropriate for a doctor to take what that patient is telling you as a history? Or do you have to verify it or talk to other healthcare providers to make sure that they're not just running off and making something up?
I had no reason to believe that she was not a reliable reporter.
Because she seemed very forthright, right?
Yes.
She seemed very honest in her disclosure of her symptomology, right?
Yes.
One of the things, or one of the tools that you and the mental health field have access to is psychiatric testing, right?
Yes.
Okay. You have, for example, one tool, and I think psychologists, and there are psychologists that are on staff, I would imagine, at McLean as well.
No, not on that unit.
As a psychiatrist, you don't administer psychiatric or psychological testing, do you?
No.
All right. But for example, you've got the Beck inventory test, or the what's called the MMPI test. You're familiar with those, right?
These are forms and forms that the patient can fill out.
Right. And one of the tests is the MMPI, which is Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory Test, right?
I have heard of that.
Okay. And you know that one of the things that it determines is if they call it the K scale, whether or not somebody is lying or minimizing, or not minimizing, but lying about their symptomology, right?
I don't know much about the scale.
Well, that's a tool that can give someone information as to the person's presentation of their symptomology. That would be important as to their honesty of whether or not they're trying to minimize or whether or not they're trying to falsely project their symptomology, right?
I don't know what you're asking me.
Okay. Were you aware that there were ever any psychological testing administered to Lindsay? MMPI or Beck or anything?
No.
Okay. How many times did she call or reach out to help for a suicide hotline?
I don't know.
Wouldn't that be something important to find out if the person who you're suggesting was denying suicidality or suicidal ideation upon your evaluation that she called out to suicide hotlines?
She told us that she was having suicidal thoughts,
right,
but had no intent or plan, so I do know that she was struggling with suicidal ideation.
Right. Anybody else that you talked to? Or
Patrick,
did you talk to anybody else?
I know the social worker talked to Patrick, and he did give the information he gave.
Okay. So what I'm asking is, as you're investigating the history of this patient, you're not aware, no idea that she had reached out on not one but two occasions to a suicide hotline. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. Did you know that when she was first prescribed the Zoloft by Dr. Tufts at 25 milligrams, then increased to 50 milligrams, that she then reported that she was unable to sleep?
She shared that with us. Yeah, sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't.
Go right ahead. No problem. What is it?
I'm going to let you finish the question.
Okay. Thank you. No big deal. It's just that she reported that she went for 48 hours without sleep.
I don't remember that time quoted. I know she had difficulty sleeping.
You indicated in your testimony that, and I quote, "I would have preferred to have more information about her sleep patterns," right? Do you remember saying that?
Following the changes in the medications that we were making.
So sleep pattern would be just what it says, sleep pattern. Like you sleep from 9 at night till 7 in the morning or
yes.
12 at night, whatever your pattern would be, right?
Yes.
And why is a sleep pattern important for you as a psychiatrist trying to evaluate your patient?
Because difficulty sleeping is a symptom of several different conditions, and it can worsen several different conditions.
And you know that she had reported severe anxiety, right?
She was struggling with anxiety, yes.
Struggling with anxiety, and she was having not just insomnia, but she had very, very severe insomnia, didn't she?
She wasn't able to sleep.
And you would prefer to have more information about sleep patterns, is what you said. I'm not putting words in your mouth. That's what you said.
I know that we were able to observe her sleep while she was on the unit. Okay. Once she left the unit, I would not know how she was sleeping, which is why we referred her to somebody else so that they could continue to monitor her symptoms.
Obviously. So let's put the time that you are observing her or that your social workers are investigating, to whatever extent they did, her background. What were her sleep patterns that were important to you prior to New Year's 2023?
The amount of sleep is important.
Yeah, and you said that. You already said, "I would have preferred to have more information about her sleep patterns."
After she was in, if I was going to continue to evaluate her, I would want to observe her sleep, is what I meant.
Oh, so you didn't mean that as an evaluator of her prior medical history, trying to get a history of your patient for purposes of diagnosis and treatment, that you wanted to know what her sleep patterns were. You didn't mean that you meant prior?
The history of whether somebody's struggling with insomnia is important, and the patient can relay that to me.
Okay. You ever heard of patients that minimize their symptoms and lie about their symptoms sometimes?
Yes.
Okay. So it's important to corroborate what the person is telling you, right? I mean, you know, you want to talk to somebody else, objective, to find out what, if any, evidence there is of symptomology.
And we did that with
Patrick. I'm sorry?
So when a patient presents and they're talking to us, it is not just about what they are saying. It's about their body language, their eye contact. You can get a sense of whether a person is being honest or whether they're lying. And we are not, you know, we are providers. The patient is there to get help. They're going to tell us what is bothering them and what they're concerned about. That's why they're in the hospital.
This woman was in a locked ward. She couldn't walk off your unit, could she?
That is what a psychiatric unit is.
Right. And she was very sick, wasn't she?
I don't know what you mean by very sick.
Really? You indicated that you would assume that she would take what I prescribed. Do you do that with all of your patients? Assume that when they have mental disease or a defect that they would do what they're told?
If they are cooperative and they have been cooperative and reliable, yes.
One of the things that's referenced would be she stated that she had intrusive thoughts. Remember that?
Yes.
What were the intrusive thoughts?
From what's stated in the medical record, thoughts of suicide.
Okay. And how often would she have the intrusive thoughts?
I don't recall if the frequency.
Would you agree with me that in addition to anxiety and in addition to inability to sleep, that she was in what was self-described as a brain fog, right?
She complained of feeling, you can complain of feeling foggy.
She also complained about that she felt as if she was a zombie, right?
She did not use those words.
Did anybody else use that word describing her in your investigation?
No.
Did Patrick tell you that he was concerned about the medications that she had been prescribed over the past 2 or 3 months?
Yes.
And you knew what the medications were that she was prescribed, correct?
She told us.
She told you, okay. And she told you that she was prescribed, in addition to the SSRI Zoloft, that was increased from 25 to 100, that she was then told...
I was aware that...
I'm sorry, 50.
Correct.
She was then told to stop taking the Zoloft by Dr. Tufts, right?
She reported not being able to sleep, and they agreed that she would not take the Zoloft.
Okay, so the answer is yes. She was told to stop taking the Zoloft by Dr. Tufts, right?
I think you would have to ask Dr. Tufts that
question. Oh, I will. But I'm asking you, as investigating her...
I know that she stopped taking the Zoloft,
well,
and that she saw Dr. Tufts, so I assume that they would have come to that agreement.
All right, so as you're evaluating this patient... you're assuming that she voluntarily stopped taking the Zoloft?
Because she wasn't able to sleep and she discussed it with Dr. Tufts.
She did. You knew that.
She told us she did.
Okay. How many patients have you treated, how many women have you treated that were suffering from postpartum psychosis?
I don't recall. I don't remember, but I think it would stick in my memory, so I don't think that I probably have.
You don't think you probably have?
I don't think I have. I haven't seen any.
How about postpartum depression?
Yes.
And how many patients have you treated with postpartum depression?
Over the last 20 years, I wouldn't, there are lots of patients I have seen. I don't keep a record of what diagnoses and what people I see.
Now, one of the things that you, when I say you collectively, I mean psychiatrists, psychologists, use in your evaluations and diagnoses of patients would be what's referred to as the DSM, correct?
Yes.
And that would be DSM, it means Diagnostic Statistical Manual, right?
Yes.
And it started out with DSM-1, then it went to 2, then it went to 2R, meaning revised, and then there were a number of revisions, and now we're all the way up to DSM-5, correct?
Yes.
And DSM-5, also the most recent, would be -TR. What does TR mean?
I don't actually know.
So, the DSM, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, is really, it's about this thick, right? If you have a regular-sized book. I just have a little one, but...
I think so.
Okay. Do you rely on or do you use in your evaluation of patients the Diagnostic Statistical Manual?
The diagnoses are based on the criteria that are stated in there.
Okay. So you do use, for diagnosis purposes, what is stated in the DSM, correct?
Yes.
And it's kind of like a cookbook. I mean, it basically tells you what the ingredients of a particular mental disease or defect would be, right?
Yes.
And you know that it's basically a group of people that get together and they discuss what should or should not be included in the manual that psychiatrists and psychologists use to diagnose patients, right?
Yes.
And they try to keep up to date and stay on top of any recent developments, right?
I would assume. I don't know.
Okay.
I can't speak to us.
That's all right. So here we are in 2026, not 1928. Is postpartum depression in the DSM?
I think it's a subcategory.
You think it's a subcategory of what?
Depression.
Depression. How about psychosis? Postpartum psychosis in 2026. Is that in this manual?
I don't exactly know where it is.
Have you ever seen it in this manual?
I don't recall paying attention to where it's categorized.
So if you're treating a woman who is, as you put it, postpartum because she had the child, and then you told the jury, well, there's a time frame, a cutoff as to whether or not a person is still postpartum, still subject to mood swings, and still subject to hormone imbalance, and it's a cutoff, is what you said, right?
Different organizations use different definitions.
How about you? You're here for the government testifying in this case. What's your understanding of a cutoff of postpartum, if there is one?
For the DSM-5, it is 4 weeks for ACOG, which is the American Academy of Obstetrics or something. I don't remember what that stands for. It's 12 weeks for the CDC. It's 12 months for the CDC. It's 12 months.
Okay. So CDC would be Center for Disease Control, right?
Yes.
So they're pretty much all over the place as far as the time frame that a woman can still be involved with postpartum symptomology, right?
Yes.
Have you ever heard of a doctor by the name of Meg Spinelli?
No.
Have you read anything about the efforts being made to have the DSM-6 coming out include?
Objection.
No, overruled.
Postpartum psychosis?
I'm sorry, what's the question?
Have you read or are you aware of efforts being made to include postpartum psychosis in the DSM-6 that will be coming out within a couple of months?
I think it's clear that there is question about where it should be placed or categorized.
Okay, so are you aware of any efforts being made to include postpartum psychosis in the DSM-6 when it comes out?
Vaguely.
Vaguely. How vague?
You don't know. I know that there's question about where it should be categorized and that the DSM is reviewed every time and they try to move things around based on what clinicians and researchers think.
What, if any, impact does the thyroid have on a woman who has just had a baby and is in the postpartum period, whatever they decided, either 6 months, 4 months, a year? What impact does the thyroid have?
I am not an internal medicine physician. I am a doctor. What I do know about the thyroid is that the thyroid can affect one's mood and anxiety, whether one is pregnant or not.
So is it fair to say that thyroid levels are important in evaluating a woman who is in postpartum?
It's one tiny component of the entire...
Component.
It is one component.
Okay. So what does that mean?
It's one of the...
It's a tiny component. What does that mean?
Okay. Can you let her finish?
Sure. You'll let her finish. Go ahead.
It's one of the tests that can be done when a patient is admitted.
Okay. Was it done by McLean Hospital?
No.
What?
No.
Are you aware that your records indicate that she had a thyroid read that are part of the records?
My recall is that the TSH was not from 2022 or 2023.
Right. It was from 2000 and what? From
I wouldn't know. You'd have to refer to the record.
So in other words, it was imported into McLean records by, I guess, computer access or something from MGH years before, right?
Things move forward, yes.
I'm sorry?
Labs do populate from the past.
Okay, so in the past, as a psychiatrist, as her treating psychiatrist at McLean Hospital, trying to do an investigation, evaluate this woman to tell her what your diagnosis was and what you guys can do to help her out, did you look at the thyroid reads?
It was one of the labs that I would have reviewed.
You would have reviewed. Okay, as you're sitting here today, do you have any memory about what the thyroid reads were?
It was within normal limits.
And that would be coming from how long before? A year, two, three?
I don't remember.
So there were no actual thyroid tests done while she was at the hospital at McLean, right?
No.
What is the Edinburgh the EPDS or something like that? What is that?
It's a scale.
Scale. What kind of a scale?
It's a postpartum scale for depression.
And it's used by psychiatrists and psychologists to evaluate the risk factor of a woman who is involved with postpartum, right?
I think it's to assess the level of depression.
In a woman who's involved with postpartum, not some guy that got injured on a soccer field, right?
Yes.
So what does the EPDS mean? I'm probably butchering that. What is that an acronym for?
Edinburgh's Postpartum Depression Scale or something.
Okay. The Edinburgh Postpartum Depression Scale. Was that administered to Lindsay when she was in for the 4 days and a half that she was in your hospital?
No.
Why not?
Because we don't necessarily administer scales.
You don't necessarily what?
We don't administer scales.
Why? That's an accepted tool to evaluate a patient as a psychiatrist or a psychologist, isn't it?
It is a tool, but it doesn't, in the end, determine the diagnosis.
No, no, of course not, because the doctor who supposedly has access to the person's medical history and all of the other aspects of your evaluation is the one that gives the diagnosis, right?
The psychiatrist makes the diagnosis based on the presentation, the history of the patient.
Right. So far what we've got is a presentation of the patient who was in the locked wards at McLean Hospital, and the presentation was from her, right?
Her presentation is how she presents, how she is observed. It's not what she's telling us.
Well, isn't what she's telling you part of what you consider?
Yes.
Okay. And what Patrick's telling you is part of what you consider?
Yes.
So other than what Lindsay, who was in the locked ward, tells you, and her husband, who tells you, what, if any, investigation did you do?
We did not do any additional collateral contact.
And you didn't do any tests either, right? You didn't do any. Did you do a blood test?
Psychiatry as a field is not dependent on blood tests. If it was that simple, it would be much better for everybody. It's based on the evaluation of the patient who's sitting in front of you.
So you're suggesting to this jury that it's not a valid medical step for one to take blood from a person who is on a cocktail of drug medications to find out what their levels are?
No, not a regular procedure at all.
Okay. Now, McLean did not take any blood. McLean did not do the Edinburgh scale. But that would be something that you would be interested in, right? As to whether or not anyone else gave her the Edinburgh depression scale.
Let me clarify one thing. McLean did draw blood. They did do testing. There was no testing for levels of drugs.
Drugs.
Just
okay.
Let me clarify that. So
that's fine.
Okay.
So they took a CBC or maybe a blood count evaluation, but it had nothing to do with what was on board, as they say, as far as tricyclics, antipsychotics, SSRIs, anything, right?
They check for substances of abuse, but nothing else.
Well, there were no substances of abuse in her blood, were there?
No.
How about the tricyclics, the antipsychotics, the SSRIs, the benzodiazepines, the Z drugs that they call some of their categories? They didn't test for that, did they?
Those are not tested on a regular basis.
How about on her basis?
I don't know why I would have tested for those.
Well,
what would have been the indication?
How about if she presents and the history that she's giving you is that she was on a number of drugs for that three-month period or three-and-a-half-month period? Would it be of interest to you as to what was on board in her blood?
Medications have different half-lives. So if she had taken something, it would depend on what the half-life was. If it was a day, it would be out of her system. We would not be able to catch it at that time. It would depend on what she'd been taking and, you know, what was in her bloodstream at that point.
So the admission note that was noted in the medical records would be on page 64 of the medical records that were presented by the district attorney. Do you
remember? I don't remember what page it's on, but
that's understandable.
Thank you.
Can you tell me what I'm looking at? Exhibit 79, page 63. And that would be the record from McLean Hospital. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Can you tell me what this means when it says clinical summary?
That's the social workers.
You
know. Okay.
Can you, maybe move that microphone so that the...
Sorry. That's the social worker's note?
Correct.
And that's what the district attorney was questioning you on? When she referred you to symptomology?
Was this the conversation with Patrick? I'm not sure what... I don't recall what you're talking about.
All right. You can read along with me, all right?
Okay.
Clinical summary says the case was discussed in rounds, and would that be like on Grey's Anatomy, you have rounds and they see patients in the rooms and that type of thing? No. What does it mean when it says in rounds?
It's when we meet in the morning, the social worker, the psychiatrist, the nurse, and the charged nurse, the utilization reviewer.
Okay. So that's why it says on page 63, discussed in rounds, SW and PIC met with Lindsay as part of the intake interview, right?
Yes.
Okay. Presenting problem, then it says HX, that's history, right?
Mm-hmm.
And psychosocial HX history was discussed, correct?
Yes.
At that point, she stated that she was hoping to be home by next weekend for her daughter's birthday, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that then she relates her history as far as having a third baby on May 26th. That would be Callan, right?
Yes.
The youngest baby. And she then told you all that 12 weeks after she delivered, the baby wasn't taking the bottle. Was around the time that she was supposed to go back to work. Husband also went back to work, and she was experiencing a lot of, and then someone puts in quotes, situational anxiety. Is that correct?
That's what it states.
All right. So as a result, is that coming from her, or that word, situational anxiety, was that her words? Because it's in quotes, or was that you guys put that in there?
I didn't write that note.
Okay. But you factored that in your investigation, right?
I read it.
Okay. And as a result of this, she subsequently saw a psychiatrist that prescribed her Zoloft, right?
Yes.
And that would be Dr. Tufts, right?
Yes.
And 1 week after prescribing that, it says, after 1 week of taking it, that she developed insomnia, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So that's an indication of a reaction that the patient had to the medication that was prescribed to her, being the SSRIs, Zoloft, right?
It could be a side effect, yes.
Could be, okay. And the psychiatrist told her to stop taking Zoloft, right?
That's what it states.
And do you know from your investigation and your evaluation of Lindsay Clancy, when the doctor told her to stop taking Zoloft? It was like, I mean, you can guess, it was like a week later, a couple of days later?
It would be, if I don't recall off the top of my head, but if that information was available, it would be in my note.
Do you know, can you find your note in here? I just don't know how to navigate that. Would it help you if you had a break or a little recess just to look at this?
No.
No?
I wanted to find
it. I think it was page 63.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure.
My note?
Yes, I believe. Let me look for it. Oh, you know what? Yeah, but you're still good. I have to worry about it. Doctor, you'd agree with me that your notes are contained in Exhibit 79, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And one of the things that you had mentioned was that at the end of Lindsay's treatment at her hospital, she was discharged, ultimately, correct?
Yes.
And that was not against medical advice, was it?
No.
And finally, you had made reference to the fact that postpartum psychosis is a serious consideration for you when you or your staff when you're evaluating a patient in McLean, correct? For postpartum.
Yes.
And one of the recommendations that you made was that she should follow up with other healthcare providers. And if I understand correctly, she actually sent a text or an email or something and confirmed that she did within the hour, right?
She made an appointment with Dr. Tufts for the next morning.
Right, and she told you guys that, right?
She told the social worker that.
So she was very responsive to your advice about you should reach out to your provider, and she did that, right?
Yes.
That's all I have. Thank you.
All right. All right. Counsel, redirect.
Dr. Goodhart, you're familiar with the discharge paperwork that a patient gets, right?
Yes.
I'm going to show you what's been marked as Exhibit 146.
Yes.
Is that familiar to you?
Yes.
And you know that to be discharge paperwork for, or what's called the after-visit summary for Lindsay Clancy at her stay from McLean, correct?
Yes.
And in this discharge paperwork, there's actually two packets. So it's pages 1 of 6, and then there's another one, 1 of 7. You see that?
Yes.
And it gives instructions on if you need immediate help. It gives phone numbers, right?
Yes.
It gives a crisis plan and where to call for the suicide prevention lifeline, right?
Yes.
It gives instructions on what the patient's supposed to do or what you've talked about as far as what to do as follow-up, right?
Yes.
And in this instance, it says, what's next? Call Cassandra Wolfson. Give her a call for assistance with finding community behavioral health providers. And that's identified as the Blue Cross Blue Shield case manager, right?
Yes.
And was that based on a conversation that you had with Ms. Clancy about the fact that she wanted a new provider?
She had a psychiatrist or a prescriber. She stated that she was going to be assigned a therapist by the individuals at the South Shore. And if she wanted to have more options or more choices, she could always call that person to get more choices.
So she was looking for an additional provider?
Yeah.
Okay. And also part of this discharge packet, you see that there's a section that's labeled community services, right?
Yes.
And there are a number of online resources, as well as the direction to contact your primary care physician and insurance company, right?
Yes.
Okay. And so these are resources that were discussed and told and available to her when she was discharged from the line.
Yes.
Now, in addition to the resources that were given at discharge, you're aware she did participate in particular groups that would have given her some information and skills while she was there, right?
Yes.
And those skills were about illness and symptom management, correct?
Yes.
Self-compassion was another one, right?
Yes.
I'm going to object. This is beyond the scope of cross, which is, I think, a legitimate objection. So,
all right. Sustained.
Counsel on cross-examination kept referring to this, the unit at McLean as the locked unit, right? You
yes.
remember that line of questioning? And fair to say, it is locked for the safety of the patients, right?
Yes.
And in this circumstance with Ms. Clancy, when she arrived from Mass General via ambulance, she voluntarily agreed to be at this locked facility until it was safe for her to leave.
Yes.
Now, when she came in, she was identified, I think you said, as low risk.
Yes.
And at the lowest level of checks, correct?
Yes.
And she was very vocal with you about how long she wanted to stay and when she wanted to leave.
Yes.
And you respected that and you worked with her to come up with a plan, correct?
Yes.
And when counsel says she wasn't discharged against medical advice, would you have preferred more time with this patient to assess her symptomology?
Objection.
Overruled.
I think you're asking me to go back and do
The time, let's talk about the time that you had the conversation with her about leaving early.
Yes.
You said the original plan was to stay till at least Friday, right?
I think I didn't have a set time on when she would leave. I take it a day at a time based on how the patient is doing.
And at the time that she indicated that she wanted to bump up her discharge to Thursday,
yes,
had you had the opportunity to observe her symptoms for more than a day or two?
Yes.
Had you been able to identify if any of the issues that she came in with were resolved?
Yes.
And so she was sleeping better, right?
Yes.
Was there any indication that her mood had vastly improved?
Her mood had improved? I don't know what you mean by vastly.
Well, did you have enough time to get to the root causes of why she was having the insomnia or why she was feeling numb?
No.
Okay, and so with more time, would that have been something that you could have explored more at least?
Yes.
And you were asked on cross-examination about asking Lindsay Clancy to sign releases, and you said that you did not do that in this case, correct?
Yes.
With more time with a particular patient, is it possible that you could have determined that you needed that more information and then asked her to sign releases?
Objection. Sustained.
Well, as far as your protocol for asking for releases, is it something that you do with every patient?
No.
What are the circumstances that would lead you to ask for releases to be signed?
And it's outside the scope of cross-objection.
No, overall, all that.
It depends on how the patient is presenting, whether they appear like they appear reliable, whether their history that they're giving is consistent across different times when they were evaluated. For example, she was evaluated in the emergency department, in the CEC, then on the unit by Dr. Madwa and myself. And also we had obtained collateral information from Patrick. And so I didn't feel like there was any urgent need to obtain the collateral from the other providers. And she was telling us what she liked and what she disliked about what the providers were doing.
Okay. And so you were responding to those conversations in
yes.
coming up with a plan.
Yes.
And again, the team is not just you and your team, but also the patient as well.
Yes.
And during this time period that she was there, in addition to what she was reporting, you were also making observations of her.
Absolutely.
And was there anything inconsistent about what she was reporting to what your observations of her were?
No.
When she arrived at McLean, you were advised of what medication she had been on, correct?
Yes.
And any of the treatment plans that you or any of your colleagues recommended, did they require different medications?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
Well, you were asked about the blood work.
Yes.
And so you indicated that McLean does draw blood upon admission, right?
Yes.
But that you did not look at the blood work or ask or evaluate it for levels of medications.
Correct.
Was there any reason to do that based on the medication regimen that you were advised that she had been on?
No.
And with your treatment plan as far as medication, would there have been a reason to do that to either verify or not verify that she already had things in her system?
No.
You were asked on cross-examination about the defendant reporting that she complained of brain fog or being foggy. Do you recall that?
Yes.
Do you also recall that she was observed by nurses to have improved memory and improved concentration, over the time that she had been at McLean?
Yes.
You were asked on cross-examination about suicide hotline. And
yes.
Are you familiar with suicide hotlines?
Yes.
And what do they assess for when you call one?
Like risk. And if somebody's calling and they're feeling suicidal, I think the point is for them to send somebody or to help them through it.
So it's a point of intervention, correct?
Correct.
But in order for a person to receive intervention, they have to identify that they have an intent or a plan.
Yes.
And to your knowledge, based on your experience and your conversations with this particular patient, did she ever indicate that she ever said she had a plan?
No.
You were asked some questions about the DSM-5, and I actually have a big version of the most recent version, the DSM-5 TR, meaning text revision. You're familiar with this book?
Thank you for clarifying that, yes.
And counsel asked you some questions about postpartum depression and postpartum psychosis and whether they appear here in the DSM-5.
Yes.
Recall that line of questioning? And fair to say, they do appear. They're not their own category, correct?
Yes.
But they do appear in conversation of bipolar disorder 1, having major depressive symptoms or episodes, as well as psychosis.
Yes.
And it's very brief mention, but it's in here. Is that correct?
Yes.
And as a psychiatrist, this is just a tool that you could use.
Yes.
What other things do you rely upon when making a diagnosis other than a tool like this?
Observation of the patient, the history that they're relating, the information from family and other, you know, that's essentially it. And other records if available.
Okay, and you use that information based on your own training and experience.
Yes.
To come up with a diagnosis.
Yes.
And your diagnosis, does that have to agree with anyone else?
No.
And when you're treating a patient that comes before you for help at McLean, are you treating the patient in front of you, or are you treating the patient from several months ago?
You take the history into consideration, but you're treating the patient in front of you because that's the presentation.
Okay. Thank you. I have no further questions.
All right, Mr. Reddington?
No, thank you. Thank you, Doc.
All right.
Thank you.
More live courtroom coverage of the trial of Lindsay Clancy is on the way. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a moment. From the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited, no purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.